A nervous 24-year-old scholar scrambles through the rain, fresh from a heated argument with a tailor over an unpaid suit. His destination? A meeting with Richard Wagner, the most electrifying composer of the age. When Friedrich Nietzsche finally arrived at that drawing room in 1868, soaked and flustered, Wagner played passages from Die Meistersinger and spoke passionately about Schopenhauer. The evening ended with Wagner's warm invitation to make music and talk philosophy, and Nietzsche left in a state of indescribable elation. This encounter would ignite a relationship that shaped modern thought itself. Today, Nietzsche's fingerprints are everywhere. Freud's unconscious, Foucault's power dynamics, even our casual declarations that God is dead. Yet the man behind these seismic ideas spent much of his life in obscurity, pain, and eventual madness, a prophet unheard in his own time. Death arrived early for Nietzsche. Born in 1844, he lost his Lutheran pastor father to brain softening at age 4, a specter of inherited mental illness that would haunt him forever. Raised by mother, sister, grandmother, and 2 aunts, young Friedrich developed an inflated sense of importance, walking 5 paces ahead to shield them from imaginary dangers. At school, he excelled wildly in subjects that captivated him while ignoring mathematics entirely. His spare time overflowed with creative fervor, novels, poems, musical compositions, fencing lessons despite his awkward physique. At 14, he displayed remarkable self-awareness, critiquing his own juvenile poetry and predicting symbolist poetry decades early. Music became central when his mother bought him a piano, with Beethoven as his first hero. Yet even as a devout child, Nietzsche harbored extraordinary heretical thoughts, privately philosophizing about a different Holy Trinity, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Devil, reasoning that God needed to create his opposite to think himself. This early theological rebellion foreshadowed the philosopher who would declare God's death. At 14, Nietzsche entered Schulpforte, a former monastery turned Germany's most rigorous classical school. The regime was brutal. 4 a.m. wake-ups, 15 hours of daily study, Latin and Greek conversation, all behind 12-foot walls. After initial homesickness, he excelled despite struggles with Hebrew and mathematics. Though awkward and unathletic, he impressed peers with piano improvisations and found devoted friends. His religious devotion remained strong, but he began critically examining Christian texts. At 17, his essay Fate and History questioned whether humanity was merely a stage in universal development, anticipating Darwin. He gravitated toward controversial thinkers, Emerson, Empedocles, and Friedrich Hölderlin. When advised to stick to poets who are healthier, more lucid, and more German, he persisted in admiring the neglected Hölderlin. Throughout Forta, debilitating health problems plagued him, blinding headaches, ear infections, stomach ailments, extreme light sensitivity. Despite 20 illness episodes and doctors predicting eventual blindness, Nietzsche maintained extraordinary productivity, an early demonstration of relentless intellectual drive despite physical suffering. After a disappointing year at Bonn, Nietzsche followed Professor Ritschl to Leipzig, where he founded the Classical Society and transformed a cafe into a philological stock exchange. His gift for animating dry subjects made his Latin papers surprisingly popular. He challenged accepted ideas about Homer, arguing the Odyssey and Iliad were created by a single genius rather than multiple folk poets. Military conscription in 1867 interrupted his studies. Despite limited riding experience, he trained with horses and cannons, often muttering, "Schopenhauer, help!" A severe chest injury from misjudging his mount required months of morphine treatment. At 24, still a student without a degree, Nietzsche received an astonishing offer, the chair of philology at Basel University. Leipzig awarded him a doctorate without examination. In Basel, he found himself between 2 intellectual titans, Wagner, offering extravagant novelties and German nationalism, and Jacob Burckhardt, representing scholarly restraint and Europeanism. These opposing worldviews would pull him in different directions. At Villa Tribschen on Lake Lucerne, Nietzsche was given his own thinking room, where he found profound inspiration listening to Wagner compose Siegfried, footsteps pacing, raspy voice singing, piano notes testing melodies. During breaks, he and Cosima would picnic with the children, watching sunlight dance on the lake. Christmas 1869 brought extraordinary intimacy when Nietzsche was the sole guest, followed by a week of deepening closeness with Cosima, whose diary went mysteriously blank from December 26th to January 3rd. From this intoxicating atmosphere emerged the birth of tragedy, both passionate attack on cultural decay and manifesto for German renewal through Wagner's vision. The book's famous opening declares, "Art's development depends on the duality of Apollonian and Dionysian principles. The Apollonian represents plastic arts, sculpture, painting, architecture, dreams, embodying the rational and moral. Dionysus governs music and tragedy, transcending boundaries through wine, intoxication, ritual madness, and theatrical illusion." Nietzsche argues Greek tragedy died with Socratic optimism. Virtue is knowledge. Sins arise from ignorance. The virtuous are happy. Despite praise from Liszt and aristocrats, professional silence was deafening. No reviews appeared from philosophers or philologists, making Nietzsche feel almost as though I had committed a crime. The 1876 Bayreuth Festival shattered Nietzsche's hopes. Arriving July 22nd, he found Wagner's vision corrupted into a society event for the entire loafing riffraff of Europe. Anti-Semites celebrated the Ring's racial themes while aristocrats paraded. Suffering in cheap lodgings with a dark cupboard for seating instead of proper accommodation, Nietzsche fled the 100-piece orchestra's overwhelming volume. By August 3rd or 4th, he escaped to Klingenbrunn alone. This crisis birthed Human, All Too Human, a book for free spirits. Written in lucid, personal language, it marked Nietzsche's transformation from philologist to polemicist, a clean break from Greece, Schopenhauer, and Wagner. He boldly dedicated it to Voltaire. Nietzsche argues philosophers make sweeping claims about humanity based on narrow observation, ignoring that man has evolved and continues evolving. Religious, moral, and aesthetic sensibilities touch only surfaces, though humans believe they reach the world's heart. The free spirit applies critical analysis to everything, wanderers who know themselves as travelers to a final destination that does not exist. In January 1889, Nietzsche collapsed in Turin after embracing a horse being beaten by its driver. He descended into madness and died on August 25, 1900, after suffering strokes from late-stage syphilis. But before his breakdown, he produced his most explosive works. Thus Spoke Zarathustra emerged as an ecstatic prophecy, where the ancient Persian prophet descends to show how morality might exist after God's death. Beyond Good and Evil took a hammer to moral and intellectual traditions. In On the Genealogy of Morality, he excavated how Judeo-Christian values turned us into obedient cattle. The antidote is the Übermensch, the free spirit driven by will to power, existing throughout organic life, in tree roots pulverizing bedrock, expanding ice cracking cliffs, moss spores collapsing palace roofs. In his final lucid months, Nietzsche wrote Ecce Homo with provocative chapters like Why I Am So Wise. He declared, "I am not a man, I am dynamite." His sister Elizabeth later distorted his philosophy, publishing The Will to Power from private notes. Yet his challenge remains: can we create meaning without God?